Everyone, welcome back. 2024-25. I'm calling the meeting to order at 5:33 p.m. Okay.
Sure. So Amy's here. Anne, are you here? Evan?
Here.
This is Greg. I'm here. Kara. And Sarah is absent, but hopefully here soon. And then we have Neil here too. We have quorum.
And do we have anybody in that?
No one is on the Zoom right now, but we will keep it open.
Long to reviewing action items. Their request to reorder. Yeah. Board and community appreciation. I'll kick off. I want to appreciate Mr. Buck for all of the logistics and process changes with the coming on as board chair, just super communicative related to ink matters and shout out to Mr. Buck. Greg, I want to shout out to you for just your graciousness and handling that matter for answering my question and figure out the process.
Thank you.
I want to appreciate all the families that signed up to be buddy families for incoming students this year. And also just a general appreciation for teachers Anna and Miss Katie. Just to see them in action and appreciate the work that they do.
This is Greg. I'll appreciate the Sunflower teachers. You know, that seems like they're off to a great start. That's where my kiddo is in, and you know, it was really fun to get photos from the first week already, and a great weekly announcement to start the year off, and just seems like it's awesome. So
I want to appreciate the admin and ops team for all the work they put in over the summer to get us off to a really smooth start to the school year, as well as all the classroom teachers for all the preparations that they did in the classroom to make sure that transition was smooth. Also, Amy, for taking on this big role, and really appreciate our communication to start the school year off, so thank you. And to kind of piggyback on what you said, I met a new family at the event on Saturday that was like, I thought the pair with the family, and like it's been so helpful. And
awesome. Glad to hear that.
Kudos to everyone involved in that.
Yeah, thank you, Anne, for spearheading that. Mm-hmm.
That's your, yeah.
Appreciation that this button. We've got an item, board member comment. Any board member wishing to speak on an issue that's not on the agenda, you do so. There's no on Zoom. Fucking along. All right. Head of school report.
All right. Head of school for the first one of our school year. So in terms of recent and upcoming events, our event last Saturday, our welcome event for all families was a lot of fun. Thank you, Jim and Jimsters, for providing people for us and table games.
That's a middle photo.
Mm-hmm. The middle photo.
Yes. And it felt really good. And so
yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Hello.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm good. I'm good.
Back to school nights on September 5th. We have some testing coming up. The VA is going to start September 9th for our baseline fall data. We're done by the 26th because on the 27th we have a progression development day to hopefully start looking at that initial data from the end of the year. I'm a little bit late from PMAI is going to be on site September 19th. She's actually going to be here for 3 days this year, once in September, once in December. Over the summer, we had our second cohort of residents start in our Montessori training program with our new trainer, Jory Martinez Woods, who's the Montessori trainer and the coach during the year. It was a long summer for them. They had a week of primary instruction and then 5 weeks of elementary theory and lessons. I got to teach a week and a half of that, and that was really fun. Two of our staff members, Annabelle and Mariah, were in that cohort, along with 3 staff members from Twin Oaks. And it was really fun to have another school site staff there because there was constant conversation. You can see this alignment starting to happen even between the two schools. Over summer, we also had our expanded learning program, which went from June 10th to July 31st, which was the day before staff came back. So a long summer also for Melody, who worked the whole summer for that. The program had weekly themed activities, including the Olympics week and the science week, and that kind of informed the activities that were happening and the games that were happening during those weeks. This year's after school program started first day of school, August 14th, on a minimum day, so a long day for the after school program, with 141 students registered. One of our focuses this year in that program is making adjustments to align more with our daytime program. So what are the Montessori principles that can carry through into that after school program? To do that, Jory, our Montessori trainer and coach, is meeting with after school staff couple times a week for the first few weeks of school to kind of go over some base Montessori basics. Those teachers are also observing in the classrooms that they're running their program in during the day for a couple days, and then participating almost like as a support teacher in those classrooms to kind of see how it runs. And a big change has been making sure that all those classrooms in the after school program are taking place in our daytime classrooms. And so there's been a collaboration with the classroom teachers and the ELOF staff around like, how does this class work? And then kind of checking in at the end of the day around like, hey, like, this is how it's supposed to be like at the end of the day. And so far our classroom teachers have had great reviews of how that the ELOF program is running in their classrooms. So that's been really exciting. It's stressful to have full classroom of kids in the space where you're trying to work for that hour after school. Right? And so far, it's been really good reviews.
Has ELOF staff historically been a pipeline for daytime staff?
A little bit, yeah. So our PD week this year, we're from the 1st to the 13th. Did a lot of stuff during that time. A major part of our work is around data-driven reflection and planning. So what are the systems that we're putting in place to constantly look at lots of different types of data from the classroom and align across levels on what we're looking at, how we're assessing it, and what we're going to do based off of that data. Of course, preparing the environments is a big part of those professional development weeks. and kind of tied to that data-driven reflection and planning, a lot of Toby's work over the summer was around updating our curriculum map and then making sure that the levels align on how they're looking at it and how they're using it,
as well as how they're going to come back together and say, hey, these are the things that were in the map this past week, and this is how we agreed that we'd assess it. What does that look like across our level? So lots of alignment happening there. Part of that is creating an instructional leadership team. So we have a staff member from primary, lower elementary, and upper elementary, middle schools.
So three members who are kind of going to lead that process of aligning the curriculum map and creating some of those assessments. That's just a small sample of what we did over those PD. Tours and enrollment. So we have not yet reached our budget goal in terms of enrollment, but we still have lots of students in the pipeline and adding students daily. We're about to launch tours again for enrollment for this year because we're especially looking for those TK eligible students, right? The students that turn four by June. Is it? So we'll be running events specifically for those students because even in talking to families at the welcome gathering, I mean, the four-year-old just like, oh, I have a friend who they don't know that they're supposed to be in school. Right. They can be in school right now. So we're gearing up to market actively through social media and looking at other possibilities where it finds four-year-olds. Let us know. It's only 5 days in, but here's our attendance so far. Students are at 96%, staff at 98%. Maintain those numbers throughout the year. We're fully staffed for all daytime positions. One spot we are hiring right now is for ELOP program leaders. So pretty much it. Program lead positions. I think we're just running one. We're in renewal year. We've talked a lot about this. In terms of some updates, we've contracted with EdTech to support not just the updates to our charter, but look combing through and helping to create our data narrative. In looking at our data, the people from EdTech were pretty clear that they think that we should not be in the low tier also, that based off of the language that's given by the state, that it feels pretty clear that we should be in the middle tier. So we're kind of revisiting that with our lawyers again to determine what possible next steps are in who we have to call every day until we get an answer, essentially, because our lawyers have reached out and have not gotten an answer. Depending on the timing of that, we might need a special board meeting to approve the charter before submitting it. But if we're going to stop for a second to really explore that middle tier, then I guess it would be by that September meeting that we approve that charter at that point. So, lead in school water has been in the news again. Right? So that's been a thing that's been coming up in Oakland. We've accessed our testing data for this site and we're happy to report. So the EPA guidelines are the lead concentrations have to be below 15 micrograms per liter. And all of our water quality from all the taps indicate that there's no concern for that level. OUSD created their own lower guideline of 5 micrograms.
I thought it was like parts per billion, but I can't remember.
So it's the same. It's 5 parts per billion, also
okay.
5 micrograms per liter. And so we have one tap in use that's at 5.1 micrograms per liter. So OUSD has agreed to add below tap filters for that water source. We've also already installed tap water filters on that and every other tap for the school.
And for that one tab, we'll also make sure to run it for a minute or two in the morning and once midday.
Where is that map?
That's in the middle school.
It's in the middle school.
Yeah, okay.
Is that cost that OU has gave for the filters?
Not the ones that we've done for all of them, because
the one above the 5.5.
The one that they're putting in, yes. Yeah. And I talked to BNG today, building and grounds today. And we're working with OESD around retesting all of the water from all the water sources on campus. We did talk to somebody at East Bay Mud who said that the only time that you would think that the lead concentration in the water would increase over even 5 to 10 years is if there's a change in how water is treated that changes the pH of the water. And he said that since our last testing, the water treatment has not changed. So,
when was our last testing?
2019. Yeah.
So, just to make sure I'm understanding, so 2019, every fixture is below the EPA threshold. Every fixture in 2019 is below the OUSD threshold except one.
Yes.
At that time, since that time, all the fixtures then have this, after that testing, have this additional filter put on. Yes. And now they're also going to come and replace the 5.11, and you're working on getting everything retested.
Yes.
And you're going to run the water in the middle school one.
Replace the fixture, they're going to add a filter to the pipe right before it gets to the fixture.
Okay.
Is there a recommended period time to do the testing?
For early childhood centers, there's an every 5 years suggestion, but not for. Not that I could find so far on anywhere else.
And the news I read said that usually these issues are more around less about lead in the water and more about like lead in paint chips and things like that. And soil. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for being on top of that.
Yeah, if anybody's interested, there's the place where we found the information, because no one could find us the information. We found a state site that has all the results for all the schools across the state, which is a fascinating browse.
I should be surprised, but the EPA 15 threshold versus the USD 5, like that seems to be a big delta.
So I don't know exactly why, but the policy, OUC's policy went in place, I think in 2017. And I think it was pretty soon after there was quite a big scandal, I guess, at McClyman's High School. And that pushed OUSD. There was a big outcry about the lead in those pipes and the rates of what they were, to come up with a policy of regular testing and also having a threshold that was even more restrictive than the EPA's guidelines.
So in local districts, when you go district to district, they have different. Hayward, I think, still uses the 15. San Francisco also is at the 5.
You turned and looked at
me. Looked like you had a question. No.
If our lawyers is not successful in getting the answer we need to change the traffic, then what is our first question? First question is ACOE, our authorizer, Do they believe our case that we should be in the middle track? Where are they talking about?
ACOE has
conversation.
Right, I remember her. ACOE is essentially like that's not us, we're not going to change, we're not the ones that change your thing, and that's like this thing. So
so they're going to go by what
we're publicly officially categorized. Okay.
And do we have a like plan A, plan B scenario planning of if we can't get the track change?
Yeah, so if we can't get the track change, there's like a little more work that you have to do. And like we're gonna do that anyway, right? And like even if we do end up in the middle track, that information that we want to share about like what our plan is to make sure that this changes, that's part of our plan anyway. And so like that's gonna go in whether it's a 2-year or 5-year interval. So in many ways, it doesn't change how we approach the renewal process. That we still submit getting that list essentially.
Does the law allow for the county to, because if you're in the lowest tier, right, it's your only option is a 2-year provisional that they could authorize, right? Like, is there a world where they can say, actually, we want to authorize, like, our assessment of this is off-base and I don't know
what their
basically. I think I'm asking, like, what is the power of the board
as opposed
to what are they, like, what are their hands tied on in the vote
itself? Yeah, I don't know. I would say that given the conversation we had with them, I don't think they'd be interested in exploring that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And really, being the first round, you know, it's hard on the way.
Yeah.
That's kind of what everything was saying. They were really pushing for to really look into getting this changed, because this is the first time they created these guidelines, kind of made this blanket thing where everyone falls into the thing, but they're not like spot checking to make sure that everyone's in the right place. So bring it up to them so that they spot check it and say, like, yeah, according to our language, you're not placed in the spot.
Maybe you've already asked this question to Young Benny or even at the time. Are there any other charters that will have hearings before us? We can just get a sense from that are in the loop, that are in the...
That I don't.
Maybe worth asking, like, any in the ACOE that also are ACOE as the authorizer.
And the timing of that kind of depends on this. Get up super fast,
yeah.
And it would be before one. We were. Even today, we were talking about the timelines. By September, where you're going to be, if getting by November, where you're going to be. We definitely want to be on the earlier side of that.
So we need for September our decision before and on the
yes.
Academic oversight. It'd be me. We met this afternoon. It was largely sort of a planning meeting to sort of get a sense of what data we want to ask to review at what points during the school year. So we sort of went through what all the different assessments, which kind of talked a little bit about. So assessments and NWA, just like that. So we basically just said we're set goals for what we're going to talk about on different months. So that was sort of that conversation, and I think sort of a larger conversation around like what the, this committee and what the board wants from Daniel to see what that internship is like without really having to deal with them. We did a little bit of updates on the instructional stuff, and then we talked about the summer training program, introducing the ILT team, which is going to be on the monthly as a team, meeting monthly with Toby, and meeting weekly. So there's lots of consistent reinforcements about the data and making sure that the different process are aligned with possibilities. And we talked about the curriculum now too, which is, for me, is really exciting, knowing that classroom to classroom, there would be alignment and both Montessori and non-Montessori lessons. Just knowing that, knowing that every kid is the same, has access to the same lessons and information, and it's not so much needed classroom by classroom.
That was pretty much it.
I decided that it was super cool to see Toby sharing like the templates for the where the grade levels are like looking at data. Yeah. All right, what do you want to collect for next week? It was bringing that.
Yeah, I
you want to talk about the alternate?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I think that we've had a really solid start with FEC this year, and Marcel's leadership, we just have a great, it's just like there's a really great support group of folks working on it and have different roles in the FEC. There was a really solid welcome brigade this year, and then picnics. I heard the TKK picnic was great, and I know like I haven't been to a welcome picnic like that since we've been here, you know, on campus. Like that was awesome. So I think that was just really great for folks to be able to get together. And like we did the buddy families. I had a really good experience with, just to speak to my own experience of it, just getting to pair people and hear feedback from folks who did get to connect. Some people didn't hear back from folks that they were paired with, like with families, and I think some people were just busy or maybe had some questions at that point. But there were some really good connections made, and we did need a few more, like we had a lot of signups in the incoming TK and K, and not quite as many existing families in the primary to cover that. So in those cases, like some of us who had older children covered it just to be a resource, but I wish I had been able to pair some people better, like in their classrooms. And like, especially the younger kids, but in my case, there was an incoming second grader who'd been homeschooled. And so my daughter and I met her family and her for a play date before school started, and it was really nice. And they asked a ton of, most of the parents were asking tons of questions about Poppy, and it was really cool to see my daughter like, oh, like she didn't let me answer anything. She was like, nope, like I got that. Here's how it is in my class. Nope, you're not gonna have to worry about that. Like, da da da, you know, she just had the whole thing. So, and then I know it was helpful for the new incoming child to like, at least she knew somebody, you know, in her class that she could talk to like the first day. And that was nice. Yeah, we're going to do like an FAC meeting. We talked about kind of getting together as a play date this week to just kind of talk about, because there's always such a rush in the beginning of the year, and it, to kind of talk through like what work we would change for next year, maybe having some more ways of like centralizing, you know, putting documents together. And we're doing a lot of like, I think just trying to organize things from year to year that, yeah. And let's see what else. There's the FAC, you know, of course, like talking with folks about the FAC and sort of getting new recruits is always work in progress. We have the Wednesday night evening Zoom is coming up on the 28th. So our regular FAC Zoom. There's a campus work day the morning of 9:14. We have a committee of the three of us that have come together within the FAC around fundraising, and we're meeting with Daniel next week. And we already met this past week to sort of talk through what we've done in the past and what we want to do this year, and then we're gonna and work on a plan with Daniel. And then I have a lead for a recruitment. I'm not going to say who it is. I don't want to overly pressure her right now. But I have a lead for my spot on the FAC board for who would be great. So.
To recruit candidates.
Yes, candidates. Recruiting candidates. Is there anything I missed, Evan, that you want to add? Or?
That's awesome. Thank you guys so much. It's really cool.
So Greg, Daniel, and I met and we talked about later on the agenda, right? We'll talk through more of the details, but potential framework, if like the school framework as the board as well as Daniel's head of school. Potentially put it off to help align with LCAP goals and really laser focus on driving student outcomes. I would love to be as a board and off into multi-year framework. So I'll make sure that we're going to share more. We also talked about board membership and recruitment specifically on the and if your role. When did the election go?
October, I think. Well, I guess actually that's a question, right? I think we can set it earlier if we wanted to.
No, FAC. The FAC does it all. They run the election, they recruit candidates, they do it all. We just accept the member.
Yeah, and I don't know if Marcella's planning to do it in October. Since the last year election was so late in the year.
Got it.
I don't know the update though. If that's changed.
And you're
October. Yeah. So
still having someone who can attend, but like, I guess just hit them on the table. Someone deserve it.
I've invited this potential candidate to join.
Thank you, Natalie. On Zoom, learn by James. In terms of broader board recruitment, in addition to the FAC rep, we talked about what ideal number of board members is, like between 7 and 9. So, and ask for collective as a board to continue keep your ears out in conversations for potential candidates to join the board. And then we talked about head of school evaluation process. Also is how we can tie it to the overall effective schools board framework. Really, I think Daniel feels similarly that it should really be hand in hand in conjunction of if it's around effectiveness of school and student outcomes, it is a direct reflection on you in that board. The board should be shared and Daniel and I talked about, and we had an offline meeting or a separate meeting on one or two areas from last year's board assessment evaluation and wanted to propose to the board as potential areas that we could A, collectively agree to work on. So the two areas, and Daniel, feel free to chime in. Two areas are one, your board goals and accountability. And I think the filter that we both independently use and then aligned, very much aligned, on a lowest scoring area, the scale of 1 to 4. Reminder, 1 to 4, 1 being low, 4 being advanced, is how it was categorized. So it felt like board goals and accountability, both the board collectively and head of school scored a 1 in. So I think opportunity for improvement if that's an area we collectively want to think about. The second was around board composition. And both had from a diversity, representation of student body, community, and number of board members as well. Question.
Sure.
I'll just make a comment that the next conversation around the framework and student outcome goals would definitely align with the goals and accountability that came out of the board on track assessment. And then on board composition, yeah, I mean, increasing it would be great. And diversity of experiences and backgrounds for sure through that increase would be amazing. So I definitely support those two areas of focus for sure. And we've long said we don't necessarily need, we're right now, we're four current families on the board and no, yeah, four current families and two not current families on the board. So that, you know, if we keep that trend going, that would be good. But family members can still be really great folks to help us. Like, oh, maybe not you for the board, but who do you know? You know, like who in your personal network? And that could maybe be something even in the messaging. I don't know if, Amy, if you want to write like a couple of sentences and you could point people to that part of the website and then Daniel could include it in the, like the messages that go out to families. Yeah, like, you know, anyone is welcome. We have a lot of, we're lucky and grateful to have a lot of, if families want to get involved, they should get involved through the FAC election. But additionally, if you have interested people in your personal networks who are not families at the school, we would love to meet them. Yeah. Or your own standalone message.
Thank you.
But a small little hi, you know, quick message. I'm Amy. I'm here. And we, yeah.
Hi.
There you go.
I think this is a curiosity, and I don't have the data behind it, but also thinking about composition is it reflective ethnically and socioeconomically, thinking about word composition, that was the best of books.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's on my mind.
I think there, you could say the same thing that we see, and that's something we continually.
This is also maybe a good, if we have a board member recruitment page on the website, and I think it also, oh, it doesn't link to that brief job description. I need to make it link also to that brief job description, but we have language on there about like how we know the sentence I'm looking at is our success requires equitable voices and representation, particularly the voices of people who are Black, Latinx, Indigenous, Asian, English learners, and those who are neurodivergent. We need your leadership and capacity. So yes. But if anyone has, like, as we're, you know, rethinking about this and energizing around this, if people have updates for that website or for the brief job description, we can, this is also a good time to, you know, look at those with fresh eyes.
Oh yeah, it does.
But yeah. Yeah. It's also just, it's so amazing how much better the website that we had like 2 weeks ago. So much better than the website we had before that. But yeah, it was still like a disaster. But this one, yeah, this one is another huge leap forward. Yeah, this is at least my third or fourth. Yeah. I mean, it was so bad. It was definitely not mobile friendly, that's for sure. Like that's basically all the last website solved for, was like you could at least technically navigate it on a mobile device. This one is much nicer. I could do a quick, I could just briefly share on that. So as part of my school board coach training, I've had a chance to kind of just learn and pick up a few clarifications about Robert's Rules of Order, which we generally follow. And so I linked just a few ideas on the agenda. I don't know if people had questions, but just that, oh, I see some of you are looking at it. So just that there was a couple of, that people in a lot of cities, and I guess this is the way it's supposed to be done, is that at the beginning of a topic, someone would make a motion and then a second, and then the chairperson restates the motion so everybody understands it. And then that's when you debate it or talk about it or present about it or whatever you're going to do. The idea, and it's a little like, it can feel a little uncomfortable because you're like, why would I motion to approve it if I haven't even heard about it yet? Right. But you could, the idea is that, well, you could motion to, you know, approve it and bring it forward, but then you can end up voting no is the idea. But like, so that, just to say, that would be a clarification. It would be a change in our habits and we might not get good at it right away, but I would offer that we could start to practice to try and do it that way. And then this cool rule of Roberts, I think we could use a lot. I think the chair could use it a lot, which is you can skip a bunch of these steps. If it's clear to the room and to the chair that there is no disagreement, she can say, you know, if there is no objection, and she kind of pauses, we will adopt the motion to, and she repeats it, but right, there's the pause. Then hearing no objections, the motion repeats it, is adopted, boom. And then it's not all in favor, all that stuff, it's just unanimous. So that is a official Robert's Rules of Order procedure. And then lastly, of most places, as I'm learning, are voting to adjourn, which I always thought was weird. But the reason is that it's a check on the chair's power to like not just grumpily adjourn and leave, that it's actually requires, because then the board can no longer take it, you know, do any business, right? And so it is a check on the chair's power that we should be motioning and seconding and voting, you know, but again, hearing no objection, we're adjourned, you know, the motion to adjourn is passed, you know, you could do it quickly, but that's the idea. So any questions on that? I'll try and find a place to link this on the standing agenda so we can reference it. You know, I'm going to mess up on this a million times. So it's just about practice and we'll just see. And if it's truly awkward, there's no law that says we have to follow Robert's rules, but since we say we do, I thought we should try and better align with it. So I did for this one. Yes, the closing of this meeting is now, the adjournment is a vote. I went ahead and made that change. I think the only thing we talked about was dinner. Do you want to talk about dinner real quick? Unless you had other things. Okay.
Dinner. Wanted to get a clock with the past process of everybody except each person rotates a month. Did that work? Or
it worked, but I haven't done it yet. So
clarification, like if we have a spreadsheet with people's names, so we could track them.
Rotating works fine for me. Would someone like to create the spreadsheet? Or in fact, we have one. How about I find the spreadsheet and share it to everybody? I feel pretty clear that we can make it a public spreadsheet and I have no problem. Dinner is not about the governance of the school. So it is okay to go back and forth and check with each other. Wait, what are your dietary restrictions? And it will not be a serial illegal meeting about dinner. It's not about governance.
Thank you.
Sorry. Speaking of dinner, Sarah's going to eat dinner. I'll also just say in the past when we've rotated, which is another good reason to have more board members. Do we want to discuss like well, people should do whatever they want to do. I was just going to say, in the past, we haven't, sometimes the head has participated in the rotation, sometimes they haven't. And I would say, we should not expect the head to participate. And if, yeah. Emily, you're on Zoom. Any public comments on this item, or if we missed you on any of the other prior items, if you had any other comments?
Wait, I'm not done on this.
Oh, okay. Sarah had more too.
Oh, no, on before we move to the other one.
Uh-huh.
Right, the committee report.
Yeah.
Taking action on officers and chiefs.
Oh, right. As part of the committee report, this is where we can vote in, like, if any committee needs an alternate or something like that. So did you want to make a motion? I think you can, yeah.
Well, I guess just a discussion. I had a rough summer. But obviously that has been
I'm sorry. So a couple of things come up for me. Is that okay? So we can certainly name, we can take an action right now if someone wants to make a motion to like approve somebody else to be on the academic committee, and Sarah could then be the alternate, you know, instead. So we could swap those. What is the status? Who's the on the academic? And there's no alternate. Anne is already the alternate. Okay, great. So it's more about, we just need another member, academic. So, well, so then this brings me to my other topic regarding committees. So in the charter, which you've all had a chance to like update your bios on and stuff like that. And if you haven't done that, here's a reminder to update your bio, even you, Anne, even though you'll be terming off. I also took the opportunity to, you can read other parts of the charter and suggest anywhere, but I took the opportunity to suggest around putting in some language about this next conversation, which we're about to have around the effective school boards framework. But part of that alignment with that framework is going through a process called a committee diet, also a policy diet. And our coaching is very clear that it's unlikely that we need any committees. That the most effective boards do their work as a whole board. And there are specific times when you might need a committee and you would go and do something specifically for a time-bound deliverable and like bring it back to the board and then the committee would dissolve. So it's not like you can't have committees, but I wrote in the charter, I suggested it, that upon approval of the charter, our current committees would cease. And we would not need to, we would bring the work as we align to the framework, our work, I mean, one thing, our work, what we do as a board would shift in the alignment to effectives to the framework, but through that, there would not be a need for a committee. We might instead say, you know what, instead of all of us going to a second hour committee, we might just say we want to meet 3 times every 2 months, you know, something like that, if we need a little bit more time together to do the board work, but it would probably end up being less time, but more efficient. But still as a whole board.
That change based on the size of the board?
No, the coaching is the same. Yeah.
How does that work practically, like with Ed Timmick, for example, if you were to say the budget, like what we cover usually in that hour, you do that as a board, like you?
Our coaching would be that EdTech's presentation would become a presentation that's emailed and it doesn't need to be talked through. Yeah. And then if you have questions, you can certainly ask them questions. Then you can hop on. Board members can get questions answered for sure. But it's just like a one way. Yeah. So we do not have, we can change that language. If so, I wanted to bring that up because people are like, if people don't want it to say that in the charter, we can change that to say, upon approval of this charter, the board will consider, you know, we'll go back and reconsider what committees does it need and when and all that sort of stuff. I mean, we could change it. But I don't know, I kind of liked not having that meeting to go to, but whatever, it's all good.
Like simplifies the process.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And
a lot of times it ends up just being the same thing.
So maybe about a meeting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It, particularly the academic work, the whole point of the framework is to make that the centerpiece of what the whole board focuses on. So it will, but this whole framework is not the norm. It is not traditional. It is not board governance. To anyone who pays attention to school board governance, this is not normal behavior. So like, you know, I don't want to freak anybody out if they're like, oh, they're being so negligent. They don't have committees. They're not, you know, that's not, it's different than that. Maybe, yeah. Like, so if the county, I don't know. Yeah, if the county cared or, yeah. I mean, the whole point would be to become even more effective, but it's just not traditional. So it might, so people could have questions and wonderings about what are they doing? That's all. But in terms of like, so one, and then to get back to what you're bringing up, Sarah. So we don't have any rules or bylaws or anything about leave of absence. We have rules about like, if a member is absent, you know, so many times, the board is empowered to take action to like remove them, but we're not required to. And we've had board members in the past, like be like, I'm not gonna be able to be in service for like 5 months or 6 months, but you can keep me on, and they count against quorum requirements and they get all the emails and all that sort of stuff, but there's no expectation of them engaging thoroughly. And, but they're not like removed. So like, that's an option. But we don't have any procedure around it. We just talk about it. I was just about to look. It's of 25. It's like in 15 months. Yeah.
We're just feeling really fast. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like 6 months. Yeah. Yeah. And then you could always, if you got clearer and you were like, okay, no, I just need to fully resign or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could, I would recommend that we just like leave this between Sarah and Amy. Yeah. But until then, we could then like make a motion to put someone else on academic committee, because we still have one. and remove, we could also just remove Sarah from the committee so she doesn't count against quorum, so that we could take, that can be part of a motion. And then Anne could either be that person or remain the alternate. Yeah.
In addition to finance.
And you're already on finance. Yep. So and Kara's already on the committee. So Evan, Amy, and me, would anyone really like to serve on the academic committee? And yeah, you did just come off. For many years, I've been on two committees. I'm only on one right now. I'm happy to step on to, I'm happy to be on the academic committee. Particularly if it's only for a few months, if they all go away in a couple months.
Well, and we can't remove it until
it's in our existing charter. It's in our existing charter that we shall have the committee. So we should also, I don't know, I could talk. I like flagged it on the charter and was like, is this allowed? I asked like the lawyers and I had his response, but we could soften it. We could go back to more of the original language and just say, if the board chooses to have committees, you know, this is what they would do, or something like that. Maybe I'm tagging the wrong person. I don't know. But I can follow up with Daniel about the committee language in the charter. Is there, so That was a lot of discussion. Anyone got a motion or anything?
A second.
Okay. Do you want to try the new thing? We should have been debated. We should have made the motion long before, but we didn't know who we were going to approve. And I think your motion was also to remove Sarah. Yes.
So if there is no objection, we will adopt the motion to remove Sarah from the academic committee and replace Greg as the academic
committee. Yeah. Hearing no objection, right? Yeah.
Academic committee and
adding great. And that was Kara motioning, and who seconded that one? Amy? Great. Cool.
Any other questions on duty report? Great.
Great. And Emily, did you? You had popped on real quick. Did you have a comment while we were discussing all that stuff? Okay, just chat me here.
Sorry, no, hard to get off mute. No, but nice to listen in. All good. You know, glad to hear the what's being done about the lead testing in drinking water. So that's really cool. Overall, nothing else to add. Good summary of the FAC and excited. Hopefully we can keep making things better there. But yeah, thanks all. Have a good night.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And you definitely, yeah, you can stay, but at every item, the public gets a chance to comment. So I'm going to keep.
Got it. Okay. All right.
On the Zoom, I'm going to keep asking. Okay. So we're going to move on to the next item. Item 5B, this is the effective school board's framework and student outcome goals. It's mostly a discussion. I don't think we're going to be prepared to vote on anything. Which is totally fine. So as Amy mentioned at the executive and governance committee, we discussed this framework. I believe I'd shared prior with the board the framework specifically from the Council of the Great City Schools, which is called Student Outcomes Focused Governance. But maybe I did share this exact link to this effective school boards. I don't recall what I've shared with you, but they are two separate cousin frameworks, just to be crystal clear. Like the puzzle pieces of the frameworks are the same, but they're like jigsawed together in different order. And the reason is the council is just a large nonprofit doing work with large bureaucracies and large school districts around the country. And updating the framework, you might imagine, is like a little bit of a political discussion, because all of a sudden boards would like be losing points or earning points, you know, in different ways. Additionally, so it just doesn't get updated as frequently or as rapidly. EffectiveSchoolBoards.com, that organization exists because there are boards and governance teams out there who are not members of the council. They're not the largest urban districts in the country, but they want the coaching. So this was set up to like be a different separate vehicle. And it's led and organized by the lead coach. His name is AJ. And he has like complete control over this with like no large bureaucracy behind it. So whenever he's like, you know what, this is the best way to organize this work, he can like make an update and make a change. And so AJ was very clear that any board thinking about this work who has the kind of ability to align to either one, he said he highly recommends that if we're going to do the work, align it this way. He thinks this is a more powerful way of organizing the work. So that's what I've linked us to. And so I want to take the opportunity to, again, crystal clear, say that there is nowhere across the country where a sitting board member has had great success coaching their own board on the framework. Okay. And I don't think I'm special and like I'm going to be the one who's going to do it. I want to be crystal clear that that's where we're at. And so when we get in, it's been around for a few years. When we run into trouble, I want to be really clear, it's going to be my fault, not the framework's fault, okay? And if we really, and it's okay to choose, and it's okay to choose the framework and say like, this is, the framework's right, we need a better coach, okay? And so that's, just wanted to like put that out there. So the goal of the coaching is to really help school boards transition from being, in general, adult input focused to student outcome focused. And the most like stringent coaching is really about like mindset shifts and really doing behaving differently in our board meetings, using our time differently, organizing our work differently, aiming for different work, and much different than how most traditional school boards behave. The way we measure progress against it is this framework, earning points out of 100. And the idea is that boards who earn at least 80 points are likely to be effective in supporting their students to increase their student outcomes or in their own outcomes. It does not require 100 points, and earning 40 points is way better than earning 0 points, and 60 points is way better than 40. So like, it's not, you know, you don't have to get all the way to 80 to start seeing progress. The board, it is ultimately it is a self-evaluation score calibrated with a coach about how, you know, how well are you doing. Boards score themselves to start, to launch. Most boards who have never done the work before score 0, because that's just how it is. And then boards every quarter do it. And you do it in public, at a public meeting, at a public discussion. And basically you just go row by row and you say, okay, board, ideally everyone's done this prior to that board meeting. And you've gone through and you've said, for any of the red column, if you have those, if you have any item in the red, then you are in the red. You have to not have the red column. Okay. That's like to start. And then to get the yellow column, you have to have all the things in the yellow column. So to get yellow, you have to have all the things in the yellow and none of the things in the red. And then to get green, you have to have none of the things in the red, all in the yellow, all in the green. And to get blue, you have to have none of the red, all of the yellow, all of the green, and all of the blue. Boards do this. Some boards get, you know, to 80 points in 6 months. Some boards get to 80 points in 2 years. Who knows? And there's a few things that are key about the process. Like you want to have your eye on the blue while you're trying to avoid the red, so that you can, because you can get to like through the green, but you're like, ah, shoot, we didn't do that thing in blue. So now we can't get points. Like, for example, the second one, prior to being selected, all newly selected board members receive training on the framework from their fellow board members or from a certified coach, you know, before they're even elected, right? So right here, we have this opportunity before we take a vote on a new board member or before the FAC, right? Like, how do we train people up? Otherwise, we're going to lose those points on the board. We're not going to be able to, you know, until we finally catch up to that. Okay. So there's things like that. So the main way people get started is there's two main ways, I should say three main ways. They just go through the framework and give a self-evaluation and basically score 0. Part of that process is also like choosing, okay, how could we score, you know, 2 points the next quarter or 10 points the next quarter, you know, what would we do? And so boards, after going through it, a few next steps will be clarified and board members commit to doing things, and we try and get the train going, and we're off to the races and we see how we do. So that's one way to get started. Another way to get started is the coaches host these 2-day trainings. Over Labor Day, I'm going to be in Fresno with the Unified School District in Fresno at a 2-day training, observing their training. It's a great way to spend a Labor Day weekend. And that work, it's really powerful work. I've gotten to do it a few times, and it's really about mindset change and adult behavior change. And one of the things that's really nice about it, and I think it was my experience, but I've heard from other people who've gone through it, is that a lot of the stuff that you think about in those 2 days certainly apply to your role as a school leader and school leaders, but it also gets you thinking about your personal life as well. And like your own like adult behaviors in all aspects of your life is all I mean to say. It's hard to separate it and just have it be about schools. It's fun. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's a cool experience. Yeah, exactly. And then a third way that boards get started is creating the student outcome goals and the guardrails. And we've talked about that, and doing that powered by really a two-pronged system. One is listening for, you know, to our community, our teachers, our students, our staff, our family members, the local 7-Eleven that's not there anymore, but, you know, the community, about what do they want to be true for students? What do they want students to be able to know and do? And then also hearing from particularly Daniel, but the staff about, well, what does California say are the needs? What do all students need to know? And where are our kids against those needs? So we wouldn't, so let's say the families really, really want kids to be great at the seventh grade physical fitness test. Okay, great. And Daniel and we look at the data, it's like, actually our seventh graders are killing it on the physical fitness test. Like, I don't know, I'm making this up. We wouldn't need to set a goal around that, right? Just because families say it's a huge thing and it's awesome doesn't mean we would, as a board, choose to make a goal around it. We wanna find those few things where families have a lot of energy and the community, the community has a lot of energy. And there is a need from the school saying like, yeah, that we need to get better at that pronto. And that's where we form goals. So those are a few entry points. And so I went ahead just to give people, I linked it there in this idea of we already have an LCAP. And so I listed in that document that's linked on the agenda, I linked our LCAP goal and I linked three student outcome focused goals that I thought aligned to that one LCAP goal, that overall LCAP goal. And then for each of those goals, there's an annual target set. And then, so that's just an offering, just so people could see it. And then it would be on Daniel and his staff. And I gave examples to be like, you know, what would these, for each one of those goals, what would be the interim goals that we would look at? And I don't think Daniel's had a chance to really review this. Okay. Yeah. This is, this would be a place to ask questions. So I'll be done. This would be a place now to ask questions. So questions about like, what are you seeing on the framework? If you want to, you know, what does it mean in this row, in this color, in this column? So you could ask questions about that. You could ask questions about the listening or the LCAP goal or the draft or these like fake draft goals that I just offered just to give people something to chew on. Or we could hear like, people, you know, just people's thoughts, like about what to do next, or are people excited about this? Actually, the expectation is not that you're excited about this. That's me. The rest of you do not, probably are not going to be excited. Thank you.
So 2-day training, is that enough to feel comfortable in doing this?
So good. Thank you. The 2-day training launches. The ongoing work is usually a monthly check-in with the coach and the soup and another member of the board. And frankly, in our structure, I think that would be the current executive committee. And then absent committees, it would just still be the three of us, but we would no longer be a committee and we would not be quorum of the board. So other boards have like a board champion, the board chair, and the soup are like monthly checking in on, there's another document that gets made, an implementation timeline that kind of lays out, okay, to get more points, when are we going to create the goals? When are we going to approve the goals? When are we going to approve the guardrails? When are we going to see the interim guardrails? When are we going to adopt a monitoring calendar? We've talked about the no gotcha monitoring.
What's everybody else's role in continuing to become more familiar and pushing this forward?
That's a great question. So there's the 2 days. There's readings and books and things like that that people can just absorb on their own. There's the team that meets, and then that work comes into board meetings. Then there are additional trainings that can come in whenever the board wants one. So for example, we have a training on how to get better at those monitoring conversations. So we offer that coaching one-on-one if like one board member wants a refresher, or we just in the meeting, we agendize like a training on effective goal monitoring, or we have a training on effective, like how to budget, how does the school think about its budget through this framework? We have an hour session on that. Yeah. Or how do you evaluate the head of school? We have a training on that, you know, with resources and stuff. So those things can just come to the board at regular board meetings throughout the, you know, in half hour chunks, or they can be one, you know, one board member is responsible for that. So they just get that information, in this case from me or from another coach if you need one. And that is also offered to staff. You and your senior staff also, you know, if you're like, they're going to be, I want the effective monitoring training from the staff lens. How do I prepare the monitoring reports?
Is there a staff expectation outside of myself around familiarizing and understanding the process?
It has to be certain to some extent because of the report.
It really, so I would say in reality, most places where I'm seeing the work like closest, the soup definitely knows. The soup is part of the governance team. The governance team is the board and the soup, and the cabinet understands the framework. They haven't necessarily all gone through the 2-day training, but like when the board is discussing effective school boards and the goals and the guardrails and the framework, the staff is savvy. They understand, like, they know what the monitoring calendar is. They know they'll be leaving points on the board. Yeah. And the 2-day training is $20,000. And no, to host a training, and is generally done for a school. And I'm happy to share, let me share a couple more things on that. In California, it's best practice that it's done as a training, like a California charter schools training or other trainings, where it's not, when it's multiple school boards coming together, and during the training, the coaches mix you up from across school boards, so you're not discussing your school board work. And so it's not a meet, so it need not be a meeting, it's not a public meeting, and it's not posted. Because it does not hit the threshold and would not violate the Brown Act. So, and senior staff will attend those. So around costs, you will see multiple school systems come together to share those costs. It's right. And you will also see those costs come down dramatically when you do things like you don't provide food, which sometimes people are like, yep, your food's on your own. And you provide a space, which is basically a classroom or sunroom, something like that. So if you provide the space, then you're talking about, you know, paying for the trainer and their flights, usually their flights. And sometimes the trainers are coming through town like, oh, I'm going to be in Fresno already. So it's just a couple more hotel rooms, you know, so the costs can come down dramatically to like $1,000 or a couple of $1,000 if we get it organized. And there is a school in Oakland I know that has resources to pay for a training, but they have not, nothing is scheduled, and they don't have any other schools yet to do it with them. So it could be we could all get trained for no cost, the 2-day. That was a lot about the 2-day. Fresno is not allowed, yeah, you're not allowed in. Fresno's not a public meeting. Yeah, as far as I understand. Other questions?
I think there was a long list of things that you said.
Yeah. Told you it would be my fault, not the framework's fault.
There was more to that sentence about like the monitoring plan and timeline implementation plan and the, like, and then Daniel's question about who, you know, I guess like I'm wondering who holds this work and how can it be really, like, especially at first board work and like minimizing if the board is the decider and believer that this is what an effective board looks like, and we should be moving towards that. How do we hold as much of that, especially in the messy middle of transition, so that we minimize while still being able to maintain like a level of integrity, but minimize, like, we have a new head of school, got a very fancy office. That's what I'm just wondering, like, how can we shrink the change a little bit here, especially as it relates to school facing staff, and then, like, what's the right, you know, if I would say to our board chair, if this is the direction, and we are moving in this direction, like, it feels like a decision needs to be made of, like, we're either going to be moving towards this at a pace that we will then determine, but we are moving in this direction. That feels like one piece, but then we can maybe get,
Huge agree that, like, in any other system, people are voting on a contract with the coach. So there is an action taken that, like, says we are going to do this. Yeah, totally. Which is part of, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, like, are we saying that we believe that for the health of urban Montessori as the organization that we are stewards of, that this, using this framework to measure our effectiveness as a board, is the best thing for this one.
I'll just say, like, I'm still learning so much. I'm crystal clear, clearly, that I think this is the way we should move. And I've had so much more access and time. Like, I've been reading and learning about this. And so you guys are, it would be a huge leap of faith, you know, if you voted to, like, do it, you know, and I don't have that expectation. So, you know, things move at the speed of what's comfortable and stuff like that. So if people are ready and like, Greg, let's go for it. Great. Then yeah, we could take a motion and do it. There's also things like you can read on the website. If you really need it, like, there's a foundational book that you can read. Oh, nice. There you go. Yeah. So, you know, there's other ways to move it. How do other people feel though?
I think we need time to decide or not decide. That could be us having reading assignments and making a decision based on what we were learning. But I feel like there needs to be.
And I would want to hear in that. But, you know, Daniel. No, I don't think we should take 6 months to be. I feel like no, but it's a lot. Like, and I'm into it. Yeah, but I want to, like, have the most of time to do that. But then also here,
it's like a lot of work for you. I know that you're doing this volunteer. Right? And it's hard to make time for that. I'm not well versed in it, but I feel like everything that I've heard about it sounds really positive. I love the idea of, like, really focusing our work around student outcome goals and, like, that being what we talk about constantly. I don't think we get to do that enough in this space. I love the idea of that being tied to my evaluation, and, like, that's what I'm here to do. For me, it sounds like an exciting possibility. How long has it been? 20 grand?
Yeah.
We can find two more tea chairs.
That is not a go no go. Don't worry. What did you just say? Boards that get going on this work. I mean, board members are who you go into this work. It's such a nicer way to be a board member. Like it's. I think it'd be way easier. Just to be clear, like you get good at a different set of skills, and then it's much more clear about what your role is and how you help. And
yeah, and I think that clarity is super beneficial, right? Like I've been on this board, and like having a clear vision of like what this is supposed to look like would be super helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I think the clarity around a collective shared student outcomes focused goal to me is incredibly important. That's what we all in service different shades for the students, whether it's your own child or students. Thing one. I think the thing two around the time commitment, and maybe this is part like clarifying.
Yeah.
Seems like there is a path of do the training, and then when we see that we need additional resources, then seek out those additional training. But there is a version of do the 2-day, and then we figure it out collectively amongst ourselves. There is a version where you do the 2-day, and then in some scope and sequence, get additional training, aka more time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different versions of
how much
we want to be. Commit in terms of the time.
Yep. In some places, people like do this, and then as board members, they're like, "Oh my gosh, I really love this work." And so board members of like Charlotte, but just start to want to be coaches in other nearby districts and stuff like that. So then they commit more time because now they're not just learning the framework; they're learning how to try and coach the framework.
I think that's important in thinking about board recruitment. Right, and like who's the person that is going to enjoy and like really excited about learning about serving on a board and not doing it necessarily just because it's like, hey, like I'm finding a way to get involved in this school community and like this is one way to do it, but I think it's a different level of commitment, really.
It's definitely adults behaving differently, absolutely. And it would be on us, and you know, when we got really, really good at it, like I just said, like we would be hosting trainings called like school board school, where people are coming and learning about how to be school board members prior to running for the FAC or instead of just coming to our meetings and observe, we would ask them to go through some of this effective training. So that before we're taking an action and voting them in, they're like, yeah, I see what you're all up to. I'm down for that. That would be a part of the onboarding. Or the pre-onboarding, I guess.
Sarah, back to your earlier comment about putting a timeline, and luckily the board has been about this for a while. Can I just ask the question of what has the reservations been?
I think it's been a lack of clarity about what this next steps are.
Yeah. Yeah, I have I'm
not so much about the I'm curious about it.
I think it's next steps, and also then like we have a school out of school transition and
So some next steps would definitely be like read this framework. We could talk about it in September. And like agendize it as like taking an action on it. I'm seeing head nod. You wouldn't be around, but you wanted us to like pick a time. Okay. Evan, Anne, does that timing sound right? You're allowed to vote no.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. Okay. So then in terms of next steps, then everyone should read the framework. And you definitely can ask me questions about it. If you want more reading after that, let me know. But it's on the website. They have a book list, a recommended reading list, for sure. Uh-huh. effectiveschoolboards.com under resources. They have a glossary is really helpful, and the recommended reading. And Daniel, you should also read the framework, and then you should take a closer look at this draft. And because the question would be is like, we want to be able to have our goals fit on a page. Like, they're just our goals, and they each have an annual target, and they're written in the format that, you know, is smart in the language of the framework, and then the interim goals. And we want those goals to represent what our families would say. Yeah, we want that to be true for our kids. And so if wherever is not on this page, it doesn't resonate, then we should change it. That's all I'm saying. You don't have to do that now. I think I've weighed in. If the goal is to align to the LCAP, have this work aligned to the LCAP, that was what I weighed in on. If in getting through it, you're like, maybe these two things should align to the LCAP, but a third thing is really this other thing that we just should aim for because that matters in our community, then we should do that.
Just edit it or comment?
Whatever you want. Yeah, edit. I don't think the board, so in the coaching, the board adopts the goals. It's the board's decision. In our context, I can't imagine adopting, you never adopt the goals anywhere without collaborating with the SUB. But I feel like very, in our, like you, I'm inviting you to put your thumbprints on them. We do not adopt the interim goals. But we look at what you have for them because it's a gut check for us. Like, is how he's thinking about the interim goals, do we think that success on those interim goals will lead to success on our goal? And if we don't, we can clarify what our goal is, or we can say, no, we think your interims are a little off, and we can go back and forth. We don't adopt our goals until we are good with the interims that he's already aligning to our goals. So that would, no, we don't create or vote. I did draft some examples to help him out, but you should, again, just to give him the structure and the language, but you should, I think he'll see when you get a chance to look at it, like they'll look different. The other thing is then to think about the values of the school, and we can talk, that's maybe another homework assignment. We have values on our website. And so another thing, and I can work on this too, is how do we draft a few thou shall not statements, which are the guardrails that protect the values. So if we have a value of like noticing and caring, then like the superintendent shall not what, you know, and we have to, you know, we think about like if the head of school has 10 ways to get to the goals, the guardrails take away two or three of those options that like our community won't stand for. And so like you could think of like, what are the things our community has not allowed or wanted in the past? Like those are the things we want to have guardrails about, right? You can get to the goal. We want you to get to these student outcomes, but you can't do it without giving teachers three chances to improve or whatever, you know, something like that. Because in our community, we value, you know,
if we're monitoring that in public.
Yep. Oh, it is public. It is completely allowed to have public information about the percentage or number of staff on program improvement plans, the percentage of staff who have successfully exited them, all that sort of stuff. That's not protected information. Yeah.
But it's anonymous, or is it specific?
No. It is aggregate. Yeah. It's not individual. It's not individual names. No. No, you can say five people are on PIPs. Yeah. And you can also, the guardrail could be different. The guardrail could be the head of school shall not allow there to be, shall not allow a lack of reason, you know, clarity in the employment procedures and supportive, you know, or shall not allow staff to go more than a year without an evaluation or whatever, things like that. So we can be thinking about a few guardrails that still leaves the SUB options to get to the goals. The idea there is that every community is a little different, And everyone wants high goals, but not everyone's comfortable with getting to the goals in the same way. Like, we would not allow in our community, you may not allow students to be on a computer more than 3 hours a day, you know, or whatever. Like, our community does not want that, right? We want them to read and do math, but not if they, not by just, you know, sitting there in this front of a screen. You get input on everything, and so does the community. Yeah. Yeah, everyone who shows up. All right. I think that's a lot. Thank you guys for engaging in that. Other final thoughts or questions? Yeah. And everyone's got homework. It is I did make tonight a vote. If people feel compelled to vote now. Not on the specific goals, but moving forward. But all right, I'm not hearing any motion, so. Sounds good. Any public?
Big changes?
Yeah.
You were supportive of these changes, Daniel.
No, he's looking for someone to make a motion. You definitely get... Nope. I feel like of all the board members, I'm definitely the one who should not make the motion, but I know how I would vote. So are we moving on? Any public comments on this item? All right. Should we go on to other business? Oh, that's me. What do I have? So Daniel, as Daniel mentioned, lead in the school water has clearly been in the news. So Oakland Side has a couple articles, if you're curious, and OUSD probably has some stuff up on their website as well about just testing that they've done and the remediation work that they're doing to make sure the water is as safe as possible. And so again, thank you, Daniel, for being proactive here at our facility as well. And then the other thing was, I believe at their last board meeting, which was a week ago Wednesday, OUSD passed another policy, this one directing their superintendent. I don't remember the exact language, I'm going to get this wrong, but something about directing the superintendent to get organized around a school transformation redesign process or a district redesign process. And there was Brookfield was already named as a single site that was should like go through a process. But this is directing the soup to create a more comprehensive district wide reorganization. I believe it has to do, you know, it's a response to the ongoing fiscal situation. But I've talked to, this is the third school I've talked to since the start of school, and schools are looking for children. Enrollment is, at least in the three schools, you know, they're not where they would like to be or had hoped to be. And people are having tours. Yeah, people are definitely still having tours. And there's still a lot of movement. Kids are trying a school and then moving and trying another school. That's just how it is. But the OUSD policy that passed and the enrollment pressures and stuff, I think are just, I would encourage us and everybody to just stay open about, we're all in this together in our city. And I always say, if 400 plus thousand Oaklanders all showed up today to the city of Oakland, and we said to ourselves, how are we going to educate our children? There's no way we would plop down all the schools that we currently have plopped down. We wouldn't organize ourselves this way. But here we are. But how can we move to a more, I talk about a school system that more respirates, you know, that can grow and expand and grow and expand as it needs to without it being so traumatic for everyone involved, which is hard to do. But I think it, I think the pressures create opportunities for, like, you know, just new ideas, new solutions, and really anchoring on like what is a community most value and what is it willing to let go of. I guess that's all I have for that item. Are there any public comments on that one? All right, I'm gonna keep going here. We need a on the minutes. Is there anyone who wants to make a motion to approve the minutes from June? Thank you, Kara. I'll second it. Any public comments or questions? Hearing no objections, I'm going to just, yeah, hearing no objections. I think it passed, Chair. Sounds good. Great. And then I have a quick comment on the consent, which is just to say that the Finance Committee did not meet this month. And even if it had met, it was going to be too early for EdTech to do the monthly reporting. So there is no financial reporting in the consent report. And all the regular financial reporting will return to the board starting in September. I motion to approve the consent report. Thank you, Amy, for a second. Did you second? Amy seconded. Great. There was a motion and a second to approve the consent report. Hearing no objections. Motion is approved. That's a fun little trick. I'm into that. You like Daniel, you're on the next item.
Yes. So the declaration of need for fully qualified educators. This is a document that we turn into the county to let them know how many emergency teacher credentials we might be applying for in that year. And we have never applied for as many as we say we do on this document. So we err on the higher side. Making sure that they're also then safe.
A motion to approve. There's a motion to approve the declaration of need and a second. Hearing no objection. Amy's like thumbs it up. All right. I don't mean to like chair. I'm just trying to like take the minutes and keep it moving. Keep us going, Amy.
New business items for future meeting. Already in the minutes before September framework.
Yeah. And what do we think? Is that a vote to like commit, adopt? Great. All right. And you have to read the item. So it's closed session. And we also ask if there's any public comment on that item before we go into closed session. I'm not hearing any. Emily, we're gonna put you in the waiting room for closed session. Okay. It's okay if you aren't there or can't unmute. We're putting you in the waiting room. Bye. Emily is in the waiting room and now I'm gonna pause the recording.
We are returning back to open session at 7:47 p.m. No actions were taken. I am making a motion to adjourn the meeting at 7:57. I'm adjourning the meeting. Good night, everyone.
No objections. Sounds good. Thank you. All right, let me stop the recording.